Welcome in, Hokies fans, to this edition of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We record on Wednesday, November 17th, and after Tuesday's news that Justin Fuente and the Virginia Tech football program have mutually agreed to part ways, we will be spending episode 209 of the Tech Sideline Podcast primarily on the football program. We'll look at what happened with Justin Fuente in his six-year career with Virginia Tech, where things went wrong, and some possible replacements for Fuente at Virginia Tech. Oh, and the Hokies also play this weekend, so we'll also talk a little bit about the matchup with Miami on Saturday. All of that and much more coming up on episode 209 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, which starts right now. We welcome you into episode 209 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. However you are taking it in, whether that's audio archived on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, or Stitcher, or if you are watching on our YouTube channel, if you're watching archive, please leave a comment, like, and subscribe to the Tech Sideline YouTube channel. And if you are live in the stream, please leave a comment or question for Will and Chris. I'm sure there'll be plenty of them today, and we'll get to those with Katie at the end of the show. As always, the Tech Sideline Podcast brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. Virginia Tech Wrestling starting their season this weekend, two matches against Ohio State and Gardner-Webb. You can help bring Olympic hopeful athletes to Blacksburg in one of the best and fastest growing programs in the country. Go to southeastrtc.com to learn more and donate today. We have our usual Wednesday crew on set today. Will Stewart, founder and general manager of TechSideline.com across the way. Lead analyst and columnist Chris Coleman to my left. Behind the scenes, Malcolm Stewart, the best podcast producer in the land. In the fourth chair today, it is Katie Adams again. She will have her segment in the middle of the show and then get to our YouTube questions at the end. And I am your host, Jake Lyman. We got a lot to talk about today, obviously, with the news from yesterday. But first, I want to pass it off to Will. He has some housekeeping to do, I believe.
This is going to sound like an angry rant. It's not really. It's basically a marketing opportunity. So we did our podcast Monday. Got word Tuesday morning, 7:30 or so, that Fuente had, you know, we'll say the language they used, they mutually agreed to part ways. And so this morning, I think it was this morning.
I checked. It was this morning. It was probably around 10 a.m.
Probably about 10 a.m. Somebody posted on our last podcast video, shame on Tech Sideline. Head coach gets fired on Tuesday and no emergency podcast. So first of all, them's fighting words. you young people, have you ever heard that expression, that Southern expression, them's fighting words? But really after thinking about it, it occurred to me, and I actually typed this up, so I'm more or less going to read it. So if all you do is consume our podcast, either audio or video, you may not be aware that Tech Sideline is a 25-year-old media organization with four full-time employees. I guess there's people out there that think this is our hobby. You know, it's not. We have four full-time employees: Chris, me, David Cunningham, and Malcolm. And our bread and butter is our website, TechSideline.com, which has existed since 1996 when I started it. So yesterday on TechSideline.com, we ran five articles totaling about 12,000 words. And that's a lot to read, yes. And that included a 5,800-word transcript of the press conference that Whit Babcock did. And David helped transcribe that also, thanks to Andy Bitter, Mike Nizialek, Aaron McFarling, and David Teal. They didn't do it for us. They just, that's what the reporters do. They get together for those long press conferences and they divvy it up and transcribe it. So I wanted to give those guys credit for, you know, being part of that. So if you're listening to or watching the podcast, there's a whole nother world of content that, you know, that we produce that you are missing out on if that's the only way you're consuming us. We run hundreds of articles a year. We rack up close to 50 million page views a year on the website, and we get over 1,000 posts a day on our message boards. A day like yesterday, several thousand posts on our message boards. We have a dozen message boards, subscriber boards, ticket boards, football, basketball, women's basketball, Olympic sports, wrestling, etc. So come over and look at the website. If all you're doing is listening and watching, come over and look at the website. And I've said this many times before, When I say it's our bread and butter, it means we have subscription content over there. That's how we make our money. These four guys that are full-time, we don't make our money off of the podcast.
We don't make any money off the podcast.
Which gets like 3,000 or 4,000 audio downloads and 2,000 YouTube views. That's not enough to support four full-time salaries. So it happens over on the website. So come over, try the monthly subscription. It's free for the first month. And trust me, you're going to love it. You're not going to cancel. But if you want to cancel, you can cancel at any time. So when a day like yesterday happens, our reaction is not to drop what we're doing and go do an emergency podcast. We have to cater to what is known in the business world as our core business, you know. So that's where we were all day yesterday. So we attended the press conference. We produced written content for our paid subscribers. Again, five pieces. We have to tend to thousands of message board posts in a day like that. The boards just scroll, and we try to keep them under control and that sort of thing. Don't get me wrong. We love the podcast. We love doing it. You know, it opens us up to people that otherwise might not ever see us. And it's an important part of what we do, but it's not all that we are by far. So to wag your finger at us and say, shame on you, you're not seeing the whole picture. So again, it sounds like a quasi-angry rant, but it's really a marketing opportunity and an opportunity to educate people on what we do. Chris and I face that. Like, I've been doing Tech Sideline full time as a paid employee since 1999, and I own the business. I hired Chris in 2005, and Chris would go out and tell people. They're like, oh, what do you do for a living? And Chris would say, I'll work for Tech Sideline. Oh, you're a blogger. You know, what do you really do? No, we've been doing this stuff full time for many, many years. So that's kind of the whole picture. I know everybody's here to listen about Fuente, so let me cut myself off and let's get to it.
Well, I appreciate you turning the possible negative comment there into a positive. Definitely go check out the articles from yesterday. Chris, Will, and David all had articles up, and then the full transcription of Whit Babcock's press conference. But it is time to talk about Justin Fuente. Yeah. We knew this podcast was most likely coming. I think it came about 2 weeks earlier than we expected. But Justin Fuente is no longer the head coach at Virginia Tech. It came yesterday morning at about 7:45 a.m. Kind of caught everybody off guard. How much did this surprise you guys?
Surprising. I was actually in my kitchen. I just put my bacon on the oven top. Yep. And then the news came in. And I got so busy yesterday that I ran out of bacon yesterday and then forgot to go to the store. So when I woke up this morning to eat breakfast, I had no bacon. So this is like the first time in weeks I haven't eaten bacon, all because of that. But anyway.
So what do you do when there's no bacon?
I had to improvise. Yeah. I had some ham and some fruit.
Not quite bacon.
Anyway, I didn't think it was going to happen during the season.
How did you find out about it? Because I'll tell the story how I found out. How did you find out?
How did I find out about it? I found out about it when I looked at my phone after I put my bacon on the oven top, and I saw I had about 7 text messages.
Oh, right.
Like, oh, that's not common for 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I came out of the shower and looked at my phone, and a buddy of mine had texted me, and he said, is there an announcement today? And I said, no, probably not till after the UVA game. And then I went and read the next text message, and it was like, I think what it said was, holy cow, he's out. And that's when I knew to go to Hokie Sports and go to Twitter and all that stuff. So
yeah, I woke up right around 8:30 yesterday, and I got 2 or 3 texts, and I saw a Bleacher Report notification, Justin Fuente out as head coach, and caught me completely off guard. Did not think that was going to happen, especially after he had his weekly press conference Monday. And then less than 24 hours later, he's gone.
Yeah. I think this was weeks in the making. I was convinced before the Georgia Tech game that it was definitely going to happen. And I think the last few weeks were spent negotiating the buyout down. Instead of $10 million, it's $8.75 million. And I think that's what ended up – I think that's why the process got drawn out as long as it did.
So let's drill down on the buyout real quick, because that's a question people have. You know, everybody knows that the buyout was $10 million a year, and on December 15th, it was supposed to drop to $10 million a year, $10 million.
Yep.
And on December 15th, it was supposed to drop to $7.5 million. Now, it's my perception that was whichever one of those occurred, it was going to be paid at $2.5 million a year for 3 years or 4 years. Mm-hmm. Is that your...
I honestly I don't know. I didn't pay attention to that part. I just paid attention to the overall part. So, well, what's not clear is like where it comes from. I assume he's got some boosters lined up that are going
to
pay.
So Witt said yesterday that they negotiated it down to the split between those two, which is $8.75 million. And I think it was Mike Niziolek asked him, are you going to pay that as a lump sum or what? And I think, so remember, David's not mic'd, but David didn't Witt kind of, there's mind's not fully made up on that.
Yeah, I think he was leaning lump sum. And he did say there's a group of donors.
So he was leaning lump sum. And as to the question of where that's going to come from, it was some donors are stepping up. He actually mentioned financing. So maybe taking out some sort of loan. And so, you negotiate these things down with the promise of paying them as a lump sum. You know, that's part of why the recipient agrees to take less money. So anyway.
Well, on the timing of this, again, negotiating the buyout down, but do you think it could be on either side? Maybe Fuente wanted to get a head start, find his next job, or maybe Witt had maybe had a candidate in mind that he didn't want to let slip away?
I think there's two ways to look at it, and I think it's both of those things. I think Fuente... It gives you time to get back out there and judge the job market and see who's interested in you if you're out right now. And from Witt's perspective, if he's been talking to candidates, behind the scenes, as I expect he's put the feelers out, some of the responses he could have gotten was, okay, yeah, I'm interested, but what if Virginia Tech wins out and you end up keeping Justin Fuente? I don't want to go deep into these conversations unless I know he's going to be out, because I've got two other schools talking to me and their coach is already out. So I think that could have had something to do with it as well.
Yeah, I'm also betting that if Witt is having conversations, that he started to feel confident enough about them that he could definitively make the move. Because remember, one of the things we've said is that as toxic as the situation had gotten, if you're Witt, you really only make the move if you're confident you can get a guy that that you feel can turn things around, do a better job, et cetera. And if he's having conversations, then he's probably reached that point and felt it was a time to go ahead and pull the plug.
Well, we're going to go through some of the main candidates later on in the podcast. I have about 10 names written down that I want to get your guys' thoughts on. That'll come in the second half of the podcast. But I just want to look back on kind of the end of this Justin Fuente era. It seemed like this was in the cards for a while now. Again, Chris, you mentioned doesn't happen very often when an athletic director has to have a press conference saying that he's retaining his head coach. So it seemed like it was in the cards for a while. Where do you think the final nail in the coffin was at the end of this thing?
I would probably say once they blew a two-score lead against Notre Dame, and you knew what was going to happen the next week against Pitt, because Pitt was just a bad matchup for Tech. You're sitting there thinking, okay, we're 3-1 going into Notre Dame, and we have to win this one because we're going to lose to Pitt next week. At least that was my thinking. So when Tech lost to Notre Dame, I think that's when I realized, this is not going to happen. This is over. That's just how I viewed it.
Yeah, I think, I thought that Witt and Justin handled the off season very well, and they set expectations. They were positive about the players and got the fans excited about the season and kind of tried to get over the end of the season last year. Mm-hmm. And a press conference that Witt himself admitted was kind of awkward and not well done. I thought that was very refreshing to hear him basically say that yesterday. I didn't do all that great a job of that press conference at the end of last year. So then you beat UNC, great. You beat Middle Tennessee. And you lose at WVU because you can't score in the red zone, and you could feel the frustration level start to build. You beat Richmond just 21-10, and then you lose to Notre Dame when you really kind of had the game in hand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when I really felt it turn, and then Pitt just got ugly after that, and there was no doubt about it after that.
The Pitt game, when it was 21-0 at halftime and I just watched the student section clear out, that's kind of when it felt like it was over. But this is a Justin Fuente era that it started on such a high note. I think when he was hired to replace Frank Beamer, most people, if not everybody, thought that was the right hire to make at the time. Yeah. He takes Tech to a 10-win season and an ACC Coastal Championship in his first year. It seemed like everything was going in the right direction. It just never it was all downhill from that first year.
Yeah, I think you can kind of draw a line in the sand in the 2018 season, and I'm not necessarily talking about the record. in the results. I'm talking about the issues with the players that year. There were players, his group of seniors, like in 2016 and 2017, you know, your Edmonds brothers, Isaiah Ford, Sam Rogers, Ken Akanum, guys like that, they were awesome. They were awesome. But for whatever reason, that leadership skill did not get passed down to that group of players below them.
That were left behind.
And there were highly influential players on that team that did not like Fuente. And when they exited the program, they let that be well known. And it created a toxic atmosphere amongst the fan base. And there were issues in the program, of course. And I feel like Fuente ran a pretty tight ship his first couple of years. But, you know, that whole thing with the players only meeting, and he was basically like, what do you guys want? And the stuff like, oh, we want turkey bacon instead of regular bacon came out. Now, I'm telling you, if you want to have a soft football team, you give them turkey bacon instead of regular bacon. But I think he gave up too much then. And they liked him more after that. But liking a coach doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a better football team. I don't think they do a good job of holding guys accountable and establishing discipline and things like that. And it's those things that lead to better player development, which ultimately I think is Virginia Tech's issue. I was reading an article by Andy Bitter in The Athletic this morning, and he had some anonymous quotes from, you know, people who have been in Tech's program and also like assistant coaches who have coached against Virginia Tech. And the assistant coach who had coached against Tech, he says, basically said, Virginia Tech has talent, but most of their players don't play up to their talent level. Which is a player development.
Which is what you've been saying.
Yeah, it's exactly what I've been saying. So I think that's where he lost it. I think when he gave up too much, he started letting the players do what they wanted to do. That's when Virginia Tech's player development dropped off, and he just couldn't handle that for whatever reason. And I think in hindsight, that was the big turning point in the program.
And you wrote in your article, he needed to find more of a happy medium between being popular with the players, but also being their leader.
Correct.
And having discipline.
Yeah, I mean, and I remember, it can be a disaster if you hire the players' coach, right? Yeah. So he became more of a players' coach after that, and the results started dropping off. I mean, I remember when Miami hired Larry Coker, right? They hired Larry Coker because that's who the players wanted them to hire. Mm. And how did that work out? I mean, that's when Miami dropped into this undisciplined rabble as a football program, and they were never able to get it back.
Yeah. So for me, and I wrote an article about this yesterday, it's easy to get bogged down in all of the details and all of the minutiae that we've been a part of for the last 5 or 6 years. And you're right, that first season was great. He had a lot of good leftover players from Frank's tenure. There wasn't a lot of depth. There were some really good frontline players. So he adds Gerard Evans to it, who's a tough guy, real, you know, good quarterback, and just a gamer and a baller, you know, and a competitor. And that first season went really well. And then at the end of that season, Evans, Isaiah Ford, and Bucky Hodges all left with remaining eligibility. Now, this is a team that for 2017 returned a lot of starters on defense, and I think Chris, it was 6 guys who went on to play in the NFL off mm-hmm. that defense. Mm-hmm. So really good defense coming back, and a pretty darn good offense too. And then those 3 of those top guys on the offense bail. Evans did not get drafted and did not stick in the NFL. He did a touch and go in a couple of camps. Hodges, I believe, got drafted in the 6th round. I'm not sure he ever played in an NFL game.
I don't think he did.
Isaiah got drafted in the 7th round by the Dolphins. And he's still hanging in there.
He's on his 47th stint with the Dolphins.
Right. Yeah.
But these were not guys who were surefire NFL prospects. And Virginia Tech had a really good team coming back, and yet they all left. Now, Gerard has said since then that he told the coaches at the beginning of the year, I'm here for 1 year and I'm out. And Chris and I have a theory that when coaches hear that stuff, they just go, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, we hear that all the time. The high schoolers say they're going to play 3 years and go pro, and transfers say they're going to be here 1 year and go pro. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the first sign. And I continued to write in this article, and where I eventually arrived was the 2018 ODU game. And up until that game, Fuente was 21-8, and after that game, he was 22-23. And what you saw in that game, you know, it wasn't just the 49 to 35 butt whipping, and there are all kinds of stats that come out of that. They gave up 631 yards, almost 500 yards passing, to a team that finished 4-8.
With a backup quarterback.
With a backup quarterback who quit football the next year. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to mock that decision. He went to seminary. He felt the calling. It wasn't all about football for him. But this wasn't a good football team. Not like last year's Liberty team, which is actually pretty good. You know, so, and then you saw some other, like the Pitt game, 52-22 that year. And then there's another one, Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech just ran all over Virginia Tech. It was 49-28 and it wasn't nearly that close. And that was just kind of the beginning. And again, we get all bogged down in the reasons and the excuses. But in the end, when you look back on it, you're like, that was it right there. It was never the same.
You talk about those three defensive performances. You know why those three defensive performances happened? Because he retained a defensive coordinator and a defensive line coach that hadn't been interested in recruiting for a while. Tech's talent level dropped like a rock after 2017 because they had not been recruiting like in 2015 and 2016. Because they were, that's just the way the Frank Beamer tenure ended. It was just like nobody holding assistants accountable for recruiting and everything like that. And you go on the field with guys who, like Bryce Watts, I mean, people like that. I mean, they shouldn't have been. Tech was playing one of their defensive ends that year, who now plays for Duquesne, for goodness sake. Yeah. And he was playing for Virginia Tech. Yeah. And so it was just a whole, I don't really blame the 2018 season on Fuente. I think that season was going to happen either way, because I don't think Virginia Tech had talent on defense that year. And
I don't totally disagree with you, but the level of quit that I saw in some of those games was alarming.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech.
I will say, all right, now I'm going to read two tweets from former players that I read yesterday. Kenna Canem. I'll always be grateful for what Coach Fu did for our program, especially in his first year in 2016. The sense of urgency he moved with provided a much-needed spark to our team and restored what I had envisioned my time in Blacksburg would be like back when I committed to Tech.
That's interesting.
Yes. And then Halshen Gaines says, I'm a miss Fu. I know things didn't turn out the way we all planned, but you just had to be there to feel the shift he created in our program. He'll no doubt find another job and continue his coaching career. I will always believe that those issues he had with some of players recruited by the previous staff in 2018 is he really, really backed off because he was afraid of the whole transfer portal thing. And in my opinion, he shouldn't have backed off. He should have just let them go and told the rest of the team, okay, those guys don't want to be a part of how we want to build a program here.
Yeah.
And let's keep continuing what we were doing that made us successful in 2016 and 2017. Instead, he backed off. And I think that really crushed us from a player development standpoint and from a culture standpoint. And I think in the end, that was his undoing. I don't think he ever should have backed off.
I think that's a valid point, and I think he is one of those. Some coaches can deal with that transfer for portal stuff better than others. We've talked about Pittsburgh, about how Pittsburgh every two or three years will cart a team out there that is just loaded with redshirt seniors. So, and I don't think a lot of those are transfers in, so I think they do a good job of player retention. But I do think Fuente is a personality that kind of struggles with that part of the job.
You mentioned retaining Bud Foster at the beginning of the Fuente era. I wrote this down because it felt like that was a move that Justin Fuente kind of had to agree to take the job. You can't fire the legendary defensive coordinator, but correct. Do you think that would have maybe things change if Fuente had a choice of who he wanted on his defensive staff?
I think Tech's defenses were extremely talented in 2016 and 2017, and I think they could have been successful that year with a different defensive coordinator. Maybe not quite as successful with a guy like Bud, but I do think Tech benefited in the short term from retaining Bud and Charlie Wiles, but I don't think they benefited in the long term.
Yeah.
And I'm going to compare that to this decision now to make J.C. Price the interim head coach. Justin Hamilton was kind of the guy who maybe you thought would get upgraded to the interim head coach. Do you think they're not trying him out because there is a 0.3% chance Virginia Tech wins the Coastal heading into these final 2 weeks? If Hamilton wins the Coastal, wins the ACC championship, you may be backed into a corner if you're Whit Babcock.
If that did happen, then there would be a small percentage of the fan base that would try to back wit into a corner and hire J.C. Price as head coach. That's just the way some Tech fans are.
Right.
So I think there's some Tech fans right now that want us to hire Todd Grantham. I mean, he just got fired as Florida's defensive coordinator. So in the middle of the season, their defense is so bad. So I think if that happened, like whichever guy was interim head coach, there would be a little bit of pressure from some parts of the fan base. I think the main reason they did it is so Hamilton, like, there would be a lot of moving parts. Like, if Hamilton became interim head coach, then somebody else has to be defensive coordinator, right?
So that's has to fill their role.
Right. So the way I see it, Virginia Tech has two defensive line coaches, Bill Terlink and J.C. Price. So you move J.C. Price to the head coaching role, and you've still got a defensive line coach. There's only one move on the coaching staff as opposed to this whole domino effect.
No.
Well, we're going to keep talking about possible replacements for Justin Fuente, where the program goes from here. But let's check in with Katie in our fourth chair here before we take our break on episode 209 of the Tech Sideline podcast.
So it's fitting that J.C. Price takes over as head coach during Miami Week because he himself played a really great game against Miami in 1995.
He did.
Virginia Tech was 0-2 to start the season that year. Miami comes into Blacksburg ranked. J.C. Price has a sack on one of the last plays of the game to preserve the Virginia Tech win. They win 13-7, and then they never lose again. So I think he's going to have the boys ready to play this week with that, you know, just with how well that he played in that game. And
I think
he had four sacks that game.
He did.
Which is insane for a defensive tackle.
So yeah. One to preserve the win. He had four sacks, nine tackles. He was named Big East Defensive Player of the Week that week as well.
Well-deserved.
Yeah, you know, and you go back and watch that last play. The last play was actually an incomplete pass.
Yeah, they threw it at Lauren Johnson. It was incomplete.
Yeah, you know, but Tech had some defensive tackles back then that were explosive to the ball. Like David Pugh was a guy.
Well, he wasn't on that team.
Well, I know he wasn't on that team, but it was kind of back in that era.
Yeah.
And JC was one of those guys. JC struggled with a bad back, and he just finally hit a stretch that year where his back didn't bother him. And he had an outstanding year. He's probably National Defensive Player of the Year for that game, too.
Yep.
I don't know. But Pearson Prelu also played in that game, so some interesting tidbits there. But since 1993, only one time did Virginia Tech lose their last two conference games in a season, so 2002. It's interesting that we finished the season at Miami and at UVA because we have not lost back-to-back road games since 2016.
So what you're telling me is Tech's going to be bowl eligible this year.
If I had to pick one, I couldn't tell you which one I would pick right now between which we would win, Miami and UVA. I guess it has a lot to do with if Brennan Armstrong plays.
Yeah, like if Brennan Armstrong can't play, I mean, they only scored 3 points without him, and they can't play defense. So, like, I could actually – if Brennan Armstrong can't play, I could actually see Tech going up there and steamrolling UVA. Their defense is horrible.
So the whole thing about, you know, is Tech going to get rolled down at Miami this Saturday? And this is a legit question I have. Once you get to game day, how big of a role does the head coach really play? You know, it's all about prep, and then the coordinators are making the play calls during the game. Now, I guess the coach makes decisions about when are we going to go for it on fourth down? Are we going to go for two? When are we going to call a timeout? You know, but it's not like he's calling plays. Yeah. If they go down there properly prepared, sure, they can play a good, great game even without Fuente.
I mean, do you remember watching Bobby Bowden coach? Like, even in his heyday, he never had a headset. Occasionally, he'd want to say something to, like, Mark Richt, his offensive coordinator, so somebody would bring him a headset. But other than that, he just sat there in his straw hat and watched the game.
So, there's a story from the 2001 Gator Bowl. Tech played Florida State down in the Gator Bowl, I don't remember exactly what the score was, but this game dragged on in the second and third quarter, and Tech was very competitive. I think they were actually beating Florida State. And Bowden supposedly puts the headset on and says something like, do we need to start blitzing more? Do we need to change things up here?
Right.
And they change, and then they come back and they win the football game. So that was – he, like, had one piece of input in that game. And Mac Brown's the same way. You see Mac just walking up
down the
side.
That was the infamous Javon Walker, Ronyell Whitaker game.
Yeah. Don't wind me up on that one.
And I don't know if it's a trend. I haven't looked up stats on this, but it feels like – maybe this is more of an NFL thing, but when there is an interim head coach, that first game after the head coach gets fired, I feel like every team blows out whoever they're playing.
You'd have to look at the numbers to see if that's accurate and everything, but I think it's a really interesting game because both teams are in a period of transition, both programs. Virginia Tech, a head coaching standpoint, but the night before Virginia Tech fired Justin Fuente, Miami fired their athletics director. And I heard something about like their players this week were going to take part in like a town hall session with like the school president and everything to talk about hiring a new athletic director and talk about the football program as a whole. Wow. And that's a little bit of a distraction.
Yeah.
And with a new AD, obviously those guys know that it puts Manny Diaz squarely in the crosshairs. Right, because they're not impressed with the job he's done down there. So I wouldn't think he would get fired after this year because a new AD won't be in place by then. But it puts him probably one of the top five in coacheshotseat.com, right, on their list heading into next season. So you've got to think some of those Miami guys have their futures in doubt a little bit in their head. So, and you just don't know how players are going to respond to that. One team could respond to it really well, and the other team could respond to it really poorly, and we see a blowout. Both teams could respond to it poorly, and we just see a horrible,
really
lethargic
ugly game.
Football game. Or both teams could respond to it great, and we see a really high-level competitive environment. It's just those are the intangibles that you can't pick.
And speaking of hotseats.com, that CBS Sports article I referenced at the beginning of the season, our season preview, three hottest seats were Randy Edsall, Justin Fuente, Scott Frost. Two of three are now gone. Yeah. I believe Scott Frost is coming back.
How about Jim Mora taking the UConn job?
Very interesting. We've hijacked Katie. Let's see what else she's got.
No, you're fine. I think it's definitely going to play a factor as well that this is a night game in Coral Gables. It's their senior day. I know, Will, you said on the last podcast that you were potentially going to do a deep dive on how well we play in night games at Coral Gables. Did this happen?
And that did not happen because of yesterday. So, I essentially started working at 7:30 in the morning, and I was up till 2 a.m. last night. Mm-hmm. You know, so didn't get a chance to go into that.
I would have to assume that it's not great. But one last little tidbit. Miami is the only ACC coastal school that we don't hold the record over for all-time games. So we're 15-23 against them all-time. But every other ACC coastal school, we hold the record.
Right. And, but I want to say we were something like 0-7 or 0-8 against Miami before the 95 game.
They had a really long win streak.
Yeah. So I know they beat us in a couple of bowl games, I believe, right? Back in like one in the 60s and one in the early 80s.
Yeah, like Peach Bowl when I was still in high school. Do you know who Miami's quarterback in that game was? Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly.
Wow.
I think the next year Miami, you know, and I think there are people that will remember this and be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the next year Miami came to Lane Stadium to play. And
Kelly got hurt.
He did. I think it was David Marvel that tackled him and separated Kelly's shoulder. And I think
Mark Richt came into the game.
Yeah,
wow. Kelly's backup. Yep.
Yeah.
That's all for me.
All right. Well, thank you, Katie. We are going to take a break here on episode 209 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. When we get back, we'll get to what everybody's waiting for. Who is going to be the next head coach of Virginia Tech football? I've got, again, about 10 names written down. I'm also going to ask Will and Chris for some off-the-wall candidates that maybe aren't being talked about right now. So look forward to that, and then we'll also check on the Miami game later this week because there is still a football game to be played on Saturday down in Coral Gables. Stay with us. We're going to take a break here on episode 209 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to episode 209 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We are doing a deep dive on Justin Fuente getting fired yesterday, or Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente mutually agreeing to part ways, no longer the head coach of Virginia Tech football. We've already gone through his era here and how he will be remembered at Virginia Tech. Now it's time to dive in to some of the possible replacements for Justin Fuente after his six-year career in Blacksburg. Will Stewart, Chris Coleman, Katie Adams, Jake Lyman, Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes. As always, Tech Sideline Podcast brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. And again, reminder, if you are on YouTube, leave a question for Will and Chris, and we'll get to those in just a few minutes here on episode 209 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. Before we get into names who could replace Justin Fuente, Chris, you put this in your article from yesterday, a poll that Tech Sideline conducted back after Frank Beamer retired, mm-hmm. of who the fans would want to be the next head coach
in 2015
at Virginia Tech. Yep. And the results are pretty interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. So I put 13 names in the poll, and I told fans to vote for their top three candidates. So here are the results in order of popularity. Number one, Tom Herman, who has since been fired at Texas. Number two, Bud Foster, who was retired. Number three, Mark Richt, who is now retired. Number four, Justin Fuente, who just got fired from Virginia Tech yesterday. Number five, Chad Morris, who's like one of the worst Power Five coaches in the history of football. I think he's now coaching high school ball. Number six, Larry Fedora, who got, you know, circles coach around and by Justin Fuente and is now fired from UNC. Number seven, Rich Rodriguez. Fired at Arizona.
And that takes a lot considering how bad Arizona is.
Yeah, exactly. Number eight, Kirby Smart. Now we're in the bottom half of the list now. Number eight, Kirby Smart, who's the head coach at Georgia. Number nine, Dan Mullen, who did a great job in Mississippi State and was doing really well at Florida until this year.
If Marco Wilson hadn't thrown a shoe last year, he would have coached in the college football playoff.
Exactly. Exactly right. So not a great year this year, but overall, Mullen's been a pretty darn good coach. Number 10 is Pep Hamilton, who's now a quarterback's coach in the NFL, and his star has fallen as an offensive coordinator. Number 11, Matt Rhule, who is now an NFL head coach for the Panthers.
5-5 this season.
Number 12, Matt Campbell, who's done a very good job at Iowa State. And then number 13 is Dino Babers. So I find it funny that the top seven guys on this list have either been fired or have retired, while guys at the bottom of the list have gone on to have some pretty good success in college football. But, you know, overall, like only four of these 13 guys have really had success as head coaches since 2015. And that should tell you right there that how difficult it is to identify and hire the right guy. Like, you might be 100% convinced that you know, and maybe you do, but you guess what? You probably don't. Like, and that applies to me just as much as anybody. Like, because I'm pretty sure my top three vote getters on this list, I'm sure at least two of them were amongst these top seven guys. I think Fuente was in my top three. Yep. I don't remember who my other two were off the top of my head.
I'll bet you I voted for Tom Herman and Justin Fuente.
Me too.
And I'll bet I went off the rails and my third choice was Larry Fedora.
That might have been mine.
He was a good offensive coach. He was recruiting well at the time.
It seemed... I might have been the first person that floated Fedora's name on the boards because at that time he was coming off a 11-1 season at UNC. His offenses had always been great.
They looked like they were hitting their stride.
He was recruiting well, so you're sitting there thinking, man, you pair this guy with Bud Foster, and that could work out really, really well.
Yeah.
It seemed like, and we mentioned in the first half of the podcast, that Justin Fuente was widely regarded as a good hire when he was brought into Virginia Tech. And sometimes things just don't work out, as you can see, top seven on that list, all, again, fired or retired. So that brings us to some names that I have written down for where can Virginia Tech go from here to replace Justin Fuente. Top two names that I've heard floated the most. Mm-hmm. Dave Clawson at Wake Forest and Billy Napier at Louisiana Lafayette. It seems like those are the two guys who have kind of, you see the most smoke there for those two names.
So full disclosure, Chris has actually been researching a lot of these guys.
I've gotten through three or four of them completely. Yeah. And I was going to have it all done, you know, in a couple weeks because I thought the firing was going to happen after that. But so I've got some catching up to do.
So by contrast, I don't have much of an appetite for talking about this sort of stuff because I think you can spend a lot of time doing it, and then Witt's going to hire somebody else completely. So
I'm going to ask you at the end for an off-the-wall candidate. I'm going to ask both
of you. I don't know that I have one, but go ahead.
Well, we'll see if you can think of one at the end. But again, Dave Clawson, Billy Napier, those seem to be the two names that are being floated around the most for this Virginia Tech job. Seem like both would be pretty decent hires for Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I would have. I think both of them tick a lot of boxes. What I like about the process this time is like last time, and this is an oversimplification, but it seemed like the only two boxes that anybody thought about was an offensive-minded head coach who had had success, and is he willing to keep Bud Foster? And as we've learned over the last 6 years, there are so many other things that you need. There's a whole lot more to running a football program than that. So I don't think there's a candidate available that's going to tick every box this time around. But what I do like is we're looking at more boxes. We're taking a lot more characteristics and traits into account when we when Virginia Tech makes the decision. So I don't think there's anybody that ticks every box, and I'll say that. And the guys that you know took every box are already coaching at Ohio State and Alabama and places like that.
And maybe even Cincinnati.
Right, exactly. And yeah, so I what I like about Clawson is at every program he's been at, he's overachieved. He's taken programs that weren't so good and turned them into good programs. I think they've had six winning records in a row at Wake Forest. That hasn't happened at Wake Forest since the 40s. You know, Wake Forest is one of the worst five or six jobs in Power Five football, and he's won there. And he did a great job at Richmond. His offense it can be tweaked. Like his first year at Bowling Green, they had a receiver catch 155 passes, which is the NCAA record.
Yeah.
He's also had 1,000-yard rushers. The guy who, you know, he can identify talent. Like the guy who might win the Heisman Trophy this year.
Kenneth Walker.
Was a two-star recruit who went to Wake Forest. You know, so he's also the most experienced coach. He also happens to be the only coach that I've actually talked to anyone about, anybody who I trust with actual football knowledge. Like one of the top coaches in the state of one of the top high school coaches in the state of Virginia this morning texted me, asked me about names. And I ran Clawson by him, and he said, "I love Clawson. Had nothing but great interactions with him since he was at Richmond." And that's a major in-state coach with a great reputation in the state of Virginia. He's taken Boogie Basham out of Roanoke. He's taken Greg Dortch out of Richmond, guys that Virginia Tech misevaluated.
Yeah.
Now, the questions about Clawson are kind of the same questions I had about Mike Young when Virginia Tech hired him. What are you going to do with your coaching staff? And Mike Young's defenses were always bad at Wofford, so I didn't know how that would translate to the ACC level. And as it turned out, you know, Mike Young used an increased budget that he got at Virginia Tech to upgrade his coaching staff, including hiring, you know, guys like Chester Frazier, who are really good defensive coaches, and Tech's defense has improved. So that's the question I would ask Dave Clawson. I think he's definitely got some coaches on his staff that would be good fits at Virginia Tech, but I think there's some other guys, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, who would not be. And so that would be my number one question to him. How are you going to take your improved budget and improve your defensive staff? Yeah. And Napier, I have confidence that Napier would put a good staff together. And, you know, he's coached. I think he'd be good from a player development standpoint. He's been in the Clemson program. He's been in the Alabama program. I think he would work really hard at recruiting and things that people are looking for. My question about Napier is, he appears to be married to having complete control over the offense and calling the plays himself. That's what got him fired at Clemson. He could not coach offense against ACC coaches. So if he came in here and decided to call plays, how's that going to work out? That's the main thing. That's my biggest question mark with him. Even if you look at his offenses at Louisiana, he's had two games this year where they've gained fewer than 300 yards and three other games where they've gained fewer than 400 yards. That's not very good by modern standards. So is he actually a good offensive coach? I actually have my doubts. So I would not feel comfortable with him actually coaching the Virginia Tech offense. So like I said, he doesn't check every box. I would have to ask him, like, look, you're going to have a much bigger budget now at Louisiana. Are you willing to I'm going to give you $1 million to hire an offensive coordinator. I don't know what the number is going to be. But I give you this X amount of money to hire an offensive coordinator. You willing to spend it, or are you going to continue to take control over the offense, which I don't know that you're suited for?
I have a limited amount of exposure to them, watching them on, I think, a Thursday night recently, and I think we talked about this. Their offense that night was scary. It was not good. They wound up scoring 21 points, but particularly earlier in the game, it was...
They basically got shut out for 2.5 quarters.
Right, yeah.
I want to play devil's advocate a little bit here with Dave Clawson, and I'm telling you now that I'm getting these questions just from reading through your Twitter mentions.
Sure.
So Dave Clawson, only one really good year at Wake Forest so far this year, ranked in the top 10 right now, but you need a little more consistency there. And then also, is the offense gimmicky with that long delayed mesh point?
Who cares if it's gimmicky?
Well, that
we used to complain about Brian Steinspring for not being creative enough. And now you want to complain about somebody's offense being too creative?
Yeah.
I mean, look, and
I'm not sure the one good season thing is completely fair, and I'm sorry I don't have the record right off the top of my head, but was it 2019 when they came into Lane Stadium?
They were ranked.
They had a really good season going that year. Then they had a key injury at quarterback and a key injury at wide receiver. And that was it. They were done because they didn't have the depth. But they were having a good season.
I think, like I said, where they're one of the top worst five or six jobs in Power 5 football. I mean, that's as good as they can possibly be at Wake Forest. Like, you telling me if you switch Dave Clawson and Justin Fuente with each football team right now, do you think Wake Forest would be 9-1, and do you think Virginia Tech would be 5-5? I bet it'd be at least two games in the opposite direction for both teams.
And Wake Forest is a fourth quarter collapse against North Carolina away from being undefeated with at least an argument for the college football playoff at that point. Probably not getting in, but an argument.
Right. Okay, and not all jobs are created equal.
Yes.
All right, now you tell me if this coach is hireable. He was at a Power 5 school for 5 seasons. His first year he went 6-5-1. His second year he went 6-6. His third year he went 7-5. His fourth year he went 6-6. And his last year he went 9-2. Name that coach.
Well, again, I'm letting you know that I read through your comments, so I know who this is.
Can you name that coach? All right. Well, first of all, tell me, is that coach hireable with the records I just put out?
Looks that way. What happened to him after he went 9-2?
That's I'm not telling right you. Now, I'm not. I'm basing on.
Is that his record right now this
no,
year?
No. This is, I'm just giving you the only five years he spent at this particular Power 5 job.
Sure, he's hireable. I'm guessing that 9-2 was 2020 and they played 11 games.
Michigan
State.
No. All right. If a Virginia Tech coaching candidate will, let's say this guy is on the market right now and he has 5 years of experience at a Power 5 school, and his records were 6-5-1, 6-6, 7-5, 6-6, and 9-2.
Yeah, clearly there's a lot of other details, but you'd look at that guy.
You'd look at him, but he's like not a full-fledged. All right, it's Nick Saban.
At Michigan State.
Yes, right. And then LSU hired him. Clawson's records at Wake Forest have been better than Saban's records at Michigan State. What I'm saying is not all jobs are created equal.
Yeah. Again, just playing devil's advocate there. Those are the questions people are going to ask on these candidates. We can do a double here. Both Clemson coordinators, I know Tony Elliott was a popular name if Justin Fuente had been let go last year. He hasn't had a great year this year without Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. And then Brent Venables, who, again, I think it would take a pretty lucrative contract to get him away from Clemson.
First of all, one of the things is, like, apparently – he doesn't want to leave Clemson as long as his kids are playing there. Yep. What year are they? Okay. I have no clue.
Not sure.
So, plus, he's just not – he's a little too crazy on the sideline for me. I mean, I want my head coach being able to think clearly and make game day decisions without emotions and things like that. And he just – and you got to figure, like, he's been an elite defensive coordinator for almost 20 years now, and nobody else has hired him. Like, there's got to be something in the vetting process where they decide, you know, he's not our guy.
probably the sideline behavior.
Probably.
I mean, that rules him out for me. I don't even know a whole lot about the guy other than he steals science. I think he's a really good defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think he's a great defensive coordinator. I don't know that that would translate as a head coach. I don't know that it wouldn't. But Elliott, you know, I like Elliott. I liked him a lot more a year ago from now. So it's like, to me, it's like, can he succeed without elite talent? Now, the other thing is, like, you're talking about a completely different skill set going from coordinator to head coach. So it doesn't necessarily mean that because Clemson offense is having a down year that he's any less of an ideal candidate than he was a year ago. I mean, you'd have to sit down and talk to him. I'd have to ask him things about his philosophies on player development, discipline, rules, holding staffing. Guys accountable, staffing, things like that.
We have these whole discussions and we're reading, we're watching these guys on television and we're looking at records and reading Wikipedia entries, you know, and Witt's the guy who actually gets to sit down and have
those conversations. Like people worry about Clawson's staff and based on what I now know, the questions Whit Babcock asked Mike Young during that whole interview process, what are you going to do about your staff? Are you going to bring these Southern Conference assistants to Virginia Tech? Witt got a favorable response from Mike Young and said, no, I'm not. I'm guessing that if they sat down and talk, that I don't think Whit Babcock would hire Dave Clawson unless he made assurances about upgrading the coaching staff.
Particularly that defensive staff.
Yes, the defensive staff. That's my opinion. So when I say, yeah, I like Dave Clawson, it's for two reasons. There's more information about Clawson than anybody else. You know what you're getting in Dave Clawson. And number two, I'm operating under the assumption, with an educated guess, that he would upgrade his defensive staff before he came here.
Going to go quickly through three Group of Five head coaches, and let's start with who Vegas has as the odds-on favorite to become Virginia Tech's next head coach, and that's Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina.
He's done a really good job at whatever level of football he's coached at. What concerns me is he kind of operates at the Wisconsin of the Group of Five schools, where they have a program CEO who's their former head coach, who was an excellent head coach, really smart guy who was the CEO of TD Ameritrade. He really knows how to run an organization. So it's kind of like Wisconsin is successful. They bring these coaches in, but like it's Barry Alvarez who's like the CEO. He's the GM, sort of. Yeah. Can Jamie Chadwell operate outside of that umbrella that he's in at Coastal Carolina, which I think is actually one of the best organizations in college football? Their organization at Coastal Carolina is exceptional. Can he operate outside of that organization against, you know, better coaching talent in the ACC? And like every other, and he's never coached at the Power Five level, not even as an assistant, right? I believe.
I don't believe so.
So again, and the other major question there is, what are you going to do with your staffing, of course? Because you can't bring your Coastal Carolina staff. You're going to have some guys with Power 5 experience on the staff, some guys who know how to handle players that were higher recruited than Coastal Carolina's players. Every time I've watched Coastal Carolina play, I've enjoyed watching them play. I think from a pure humor standpoint, his offensive coordinator is Willie Korn. We did hire Jamie Chadwell, and he brought Willie Korn with him. We would have another Korn as offensive coordinator. I would really like to see Virginia Tech Twitter melt down if that happened. I think that would be hilarious. But I'd like Chadwell. He's on my list. What I would really like, he might actually bump to the top of my list if we could bring
the TD Ameritrade CEO.
Yes, exactly, and make him associate athletic director for football and have him run all football operations. I would love that. That might actually be a more important hire than the actual head coach.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, Jamie Chadwell, odds on favorite, at least says Las Vegas, plus 400 to become Virginia Tech next
so
head
are
coach.
So you're looking at the same article I'm looking at.
I am. At. And Billy Napier is next at plus 500, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And then Mike Elko.
I only
heard that name floated like yesterday.
I heard that yesterday.
Well, he was going to be my dark horse.
Okay, so here we go. Let's just go with that off the wall.
Hey, well, he's a Pennsylvania guy. He's got ties in this region.
So who is he? Where is he coaching right now?
He's Texas A&M's defensive coordinator. Yeah. He is Dave Clawson's former defensive coordinator. But, you know, at the beginning of Clawson's tenure, their defense was better than their offense when Elko was their defensive coordinator. I believe he was their defensive coordinator when they held Virginia Tech to 0 points in four quarters of football in 2014.
That's being the tallest midget in the room.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, from a coordinator standpoint, he's got a good resume. And, you know, he's obviously worked now in a big-time program. He knows the region from his years at Wake Forest, so he would be a dark horse candidate for me.
There we go. We'll clip that if he ends up becoming Virginia Tech's next head coach. Chris Coleman called it first. Another Group of Five head coach, kind of a younger guy, Will Healy at Charlotte.
I'm not exactly old, but I'm not really young either, but I'm really hesitant to hire somebody younger than me as Virginia Tech's head coach, right? I don't think the experience level's there. I think he's got a good mind for the game. I think he understands recruiting. Like I remember when I think he was at Austin Peay at one point, and somehow they actually signed the number one recruiting class in FCS there. For however you can FCS recruits, I think that's silly. But I think he's got it. Might have a good future in coaching, but I would feel very, very uncomfortable.
The only thing I know about Healy that's of any import is that. There is a fairly large athletic donor at Virginia Tech who is on the Healy train. He wants Will Healy. It's not Michal. I'm not talking about Michal. And I'm not going to name the name. But so you know the name's been brought up to Whit Babcock.
All right, I have a special request from the audience. David Cunningham, sitting in the room over here, he wants to hear about Gattis at Michigan.
Gattis, he and
offensive coordinator, right?
Yeah, yep. He played for Wake Forest under Jim Grobe. He was on that 2006 team.
Was he a defensive guy?
He was a defensive back, yeah. And he was one of the guys that got drafted off that team. He's 37 or 38 years old. I watched a little bit of their game against Michigan State, and I was impressed with their passing game.
And he and Witt know each other.
They right? know each other. Yeah. There's this partnership for minority coaches, and it's basically teaching minority coaches how to improve their resumes, how to interview for jobs and things like
market
that.
Market themselves. Yeah, right.
So Witt is basically his coach on this committee. Like each coach is paired with an athletic director, and they are paired together.
So let's jump in here and make a point that, you know, when these coaching searches go on, the agents get involved, they float names, and it really muddies the yep. water. If you go back to remembering when Witt hired Buzz Williams, Witt had direct conversations with Buzz. Buzz doesn't have an agent.
Right.
You know, so Witt was able to have these. I remember Witt saying something like, it was like we were dating. We stayed up and talked until late into the night. Mm-hmm. And that's how Buzz got hired.
And
I'm saying is, Witt's got Gattis' cell phone number.
Right.
Agent yeah. doesn't need to get involved. They can have a lot of in-depth conversations exactly. without anybody else being involved.
I'm pretty sure Mike Young was the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a lot of direct communication there. I don't know if Mike Young has an agent or not, but I'm pretty sure that was a lot more direct and not a lot of middlemen.
Witt could have gotten Mike Young's cell phone number just by any number of people.
By walking down the hall and talking to John Belin, right?
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think Gattis has a good mind for the game. I've heard that most athletic directors right now don't view him as quite being ready for a head coaching job. So I think that's only an outside possibility right now.
Okay, I've got two more names, and I have a feeling this one might be pretty quick. I think these were pretty much disproven yesterday. Marty Smith mentions NFL offensive coordinators Byron Leftwich for the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Brian Daboll from the Buffalo Bills.
I don't have no idea who that is.
He was, so both of those guys were floated for NFL head coaching jobs
okay.
last year.
Wow. Okay. I don't think – I remember when Byron Leftwich played in college. I saw him play in Lane Stadium.
2002
when he played for Marshall. Great quarterback.
Isn't that the game where they had to carry him down the field?
No, that was a different game. That was okay.
Great television.
Oh, yeah, it really was. He's never been a college coach, though, right?
I don't believe it. I think he went straight from player to the NFL.
I think he could certainly bring some clout in from a recruiting standpoint as in, oh, I've coached Tom Brady and things like that. But guess what? Scott Loeffler had the same clout. He went to Michigan with Brady. Then he was his grad assistant. They were best friends. He's coached a bunch of NFL quarterbacks. And Tech tried to go out and sign a bunch of five-star and four-star quarterbacks under Loeffler. I remember seeing pictures on Twitter of the quarterbacks, you know, wearing – we're in Aaron Moorhead's Super Bowl ring, and there's all these NFL connections, and guess what? Not one of them came here. So I want somebody with experience coaching college football.
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is recruiting sucks. And if you've been in the NFL and then you immediately go to college and you're like, can't we just sign players to $500,000 contracts and then I coach them up? I really don't feel like going and getting to know grandma.
When is it my turn to just pick the next player, the guy?
Right. Who are we drafting? Right. So not a lot of NFL coaches like recruiting, especially after they've been to the NFL and then they come back to college or they go to college for the first time. And that's my worry also with some people have floated Bill O'Brien.
Yes.
The Alabama offensive coordinator.
He's listed here.
Yeah. He's only coached in college 3 years since 2006. So much time in the NFL. He was okay at Penn State, nothing special. But I just think after all that time in the NFL that I don't know how serious he would take recruiting.
Well, he may prefer recruiting because he was just awful about managing a roster in the NFL. So maybe he prefers recruiting
For whatever reason, with him as offensive coordinator this year, Alabama's 68th in rushing offense. How in the world does that happen?
All right. So again, Daboll and Leftwich probably not going to be options for Virginia Tech. I think them and Eric Bieniemy probably top three candidates for NFL head coaching jobs next year. Another request from David Cunningham. Huff.
Yeah, I mean, he's at the top of the list as
well. I'm on the Huff train.
Yeah, I like Huff.
Now, wait a minute. Let me talk about Huff.
Okay.
Since I actually, like, he's one of the
He's the only one you've researched.
I wouldn't even say I've researched.
I sent this man a bunch of information about Dave Clawson like 2 weeks ago. He hadn't even looked at it.
Chris is correct. Charles Huff. So I admit there is a tendency to want what you currently don't have, right? So whatever Frank Beamer wasn't, that's what we wanted in Justin Fuente. Whatever Justin Fuente isn't or wasn't, that's the shiny thing that you want the next guy to be. Yeah. So I freely admit that. I also freely admit all I've done is watch a couple of Charles Huff press conference videos.
Which were good. That's important. You can get a feel for guys.
And he's
like
awesome. You know, he's very good with the media. He's very chatty. I think I have said jokingly that if Virginia Tech hires Charles Huff, it's going to be awful for the SMA students that have to type up Tech Talk Live for us on the press conferences because he goes 100 miles an hour. And you watch him for 3 minutes and he gets off great quotes. Like a reporter asked him, you know, what about recruiting? And he said, recruiting is something you got to do every day. You either control recruiting or it controls you. You know, and he's got stuff like that. He's got the background of having, first of all, he has been one of the best recruiters in the country. He worked at Penn State for 4 years, Alabama for 2 years, I think.
He was associate head coach at Alabama.
And associate head coach and running
backs
coach.
And
when he was at Penn State, he recruited the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area for Penn State and cleaned up. He did very well. Yep. So looking at him from the outside looking in, he is a guy that I think could get donors to open their pockets even more than they are already. That part of the operation is going well. I think that the donors would love it. And I also think with his ability to relate to people that he could continue to be a fantastic recruiter here at Virginia Tech. I don't really know anything about he's in his first year at Marshall. They're 6-4. Yeah. I don't know if he's a good head coach or not. But I will also openly admit that I'm not sure I care. And that may sound like a weird thing to say, but what do you need right now? You need an injection of enthusiasm and an injection of talent. And Charles Huff appears to be the guy that can get you those things. If he turns out to be a good program manager and a good head coach, great, you've hit a home run. If he kind of flames out in those areas, at least the next guy walks in with a bunch of talent on the roster and can do something with it. And that's what happened with Fuente. When he walked in, he had a bunch of talent on the roster and did good things with it. So you ask of your coaches to leave the program better than when they found it. And my gut feel is that Huff is a guy that could do that. All that said, this Sportsline article you and I are looking at, he's not even listed.
He is not.
There's some preposterous names on
there. Oh, absolutely preposterous.
He's not one of them.
Oh, yeah. So I don't think he's probably in my top two or three, but I mean, I've only researched like four guys, so my research is incomplete.
So he's on the Clawson train, I'm on the Huff train.
And Huff is definitely a guy that the fans would like. He would win the press conference. I think he would be able, you know, provided the right budget, be able to put together a strong recruiting staff in this region. He is from Maryland. He played at Hampton. He's got obviously he coached at Penn State.
You know, so he was born in Maryland, but apparently he grew up on the eastern shore of Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. Interesting. So where Ace Custis grew up, basically. So I think, you know, he's also coached at Mississippi State. So he's had to learn to grind there from a recruiting standpoint because recruiting at Alabama and recruiting at Virginia Tech is not the same.
Right.
Now I think he does understand the importance of it. I think he would fit the CEO mold pretty well. He's never been a coordinator before. I don't view that as a negative because I think people in the past have put too much stock on, oh, this guy finished eighth in total offense for 3 years in a row. He'd be a great head coach. Well, no,
I know that used to be important to me, and it's not.
Exactly.
Anymore.
It's not important to me at all.
Just don't be an idiot. Just know what you're looking at.
Exactly. So, yeah, Huff is certainly high on my list with my incomplete research so far. That being said, Whit Babcock's history says he greatly prefers hiring coaches with head coaching experience.
Right.
And this is Huff's first year as a head coach. They're 7-4, or excuse me, 6-4. You know, they have a worse winning percentage than they did the last few years under Doc Holliday. It's not that you should judge Huff off that. It's his first year as a head coach.
Right.
And Holliday was getting close to the end of his tenure, so we don't know what kind of recruiting they were doing there. But there's not a lot of experience there as a head coach. And I can think, like, Witt hired Jill Wilson as volleyball coach, as head coach, and she was not a previous head coach. And actually, he didn't really hire her. He turned that hire over to Desiree Rue Francois, the old associate. Jill Wilson did not work out. He promoted Tony Roby as from assistant to the head wrestling coach, and that has worked out. Now, Roby did have a previous head coaching experience at Binghamton before he came to Virginia Tech.
Which is a good wrestling
coach. Right. And then Witt did promote from within to hire the men's golf coach. So his history of hiring coaches is either guys with head coaching experience elsewhere or to promote from within. So look, we're not promoting from within for this job. This is going – I mean, unless he gets away from all his past inclinations as an athletic director, this coach is going to have head coaching experience, in my opinion. I mean that's what I do as a history major, right? I study the past to try to determine the future and things like that. And Witt's past history suggests that he's going to hire someone with head coaching experience.
That's interesting because my dark horse does not have head coaching experience.
Well, neither do my dark horse.
Who you got is your dark horse.
That's why it's a dark
horse. Are we ready to reveal my dark horse?
He's got Elko as his dark horse. Who do you have, Will?
Well, first of all, more Charles Huff hype. The other quote he had that was memorable was, again, he was talking about recruiting, and he said, it's all about recruiting. When you're watching a football game on Saturday and you see my team do something wrong that you want to blame Charles Huff for, well, that's recruiting. He said, I need to get better players, you know. So he believes in the importance of recruiting. And I think he may be one of those rare guys that actually likes it. Jim Cavanaugh was that way. That's how Jim Cavanaugh competed, was in recruiting. So my dark horse, if we're ready for that, is Jeff Grimes, the offensive coordinator at Baylor.
Okay. All right.
And who was Virginia Tech's former offensive line coach. He was here for 1 year.
So he's been
left
here
after 1 year to go to LSU, I believe.
And he did work here when Witt was here. Witt came in February 2014, I think. And I'd have to look it up. I think Grimes was still here.
Right. Now, we have to warn you during coaching searches. You're going to hear a lot of names. And we warn people this every coaching search, whether it's football or basketball. Like, you're going to have agents throwing their candidates' names out there to try to get them contract extensions and raises and things like that. You could even have Witt Babcock leaking names to throw people off the scent of his real target.
Well, for the men's basketball hire, it seemed like it was a done deal that Ryan Odom was going to get the job for about 24 hours.
Right, for about 24 hours.
And so Jeff Grimes was at Virginia Tech last in 2013, so he and Witt may have kind of passed each other in the hall, but no, I don't think they really worked together.
And there was also a point in the last basketball search where the Seton Hall coach, they kept saying, yes, he's definitely coming to Tech, right? And then all of a sudden that night, it's like, wow, it's Mike Young. How about that? Nobody had any idea. Just yesterday, I either got texts or emails or whatever from people saying that, oh, just to let you know, I've heard the head coach is going to be Dave Clawson. I've heard the head coach is going to be Billy Napier. And I've heard the head coach is going to be Jeff Grimes. So I got people emailing me yesterday saying, oh, I've heard this, I've heard this, I've heard that. And I'm like, okay. I mean, this happens every time and people fall for it every time.
Right.
Right. So maybe you'll hear stuff. Maybe it'll be accurate what you hear, but maybe it won't. But don't fall for everything you hear is what I would
think
say.
There are parts of Witt Babcock's job that he doesn't like. I think he loves.
Actually, you
part.
Think he really likes the process. He might say he doesn't, but I think he enjoys it. He's good at it.
He gets better and better as time goes on.
He doesn't hire a search firm because he likes to be he doesn't like any leaks in the whole process.
So we named about 16 guys there, I want to say. So if we want to go through the favorites, Clawson is kind of the guy Chris is leaning towards.
The concern about Clawson is potential buyout because he's got 6 or 7 years left on his deal at Wake, I think. I mean, and so you would assume at an ACC school that's an eight-figure buyout, I would assume. So that seems – I don't know. I don't know. That's up for the financial people at Virginia Tech to figure out.
And they're a private school, so.
Right.
So we got Clawson, dark horse is Elko, Texas A&M defensive coordinator for Will.
Huff.
You have Charles Huff as your guy, and then your dark horse, Jeff Grimes, offensive coordinator at Baylor.
Right.
And by sometime next week, I'm going to finish. I might skip my post-game Miami article because I don't think that matters at this point, to be honest with you. I might spend my entire day Sunday, like, finishing my research on coaches. And I'm going to write an article that's going to be probably the longest article in TSL history that lists, I don't know, maybe like 10 guys. And it's going to be have a lot of information about their past hires or not, or their past schools, what they've done there. One of the greatest tools at our disposal these days as people when you're trying to get to know someone's personality is YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, go back and I've watched Charles Huff's introductory press conference and Q&As, and I think his personality is great. I've watched Dave Clawson's introductory press conference. I watched a 40-minute Q&A that he did with fans. His personality is great. Our fans don't think they would like him because he coaches at Wake Forest, but they've actually never watched him in one of those settings. He would be awesome with our fans. You can learn so much about head coaches by just doing simple Google searches and YouTube searches and things like that. So I'm going to run. It's going to be a lot of information. It's going to be a lot of video links, a lot of things like that with a lot of candidates. Now, I will say that people are throwing names out there that I don't consider to be candidates at all, that I'm not going to include. Like, there's 0% chance I'm including Hugh Freeze.
Hugh Freeze, Shane Beamer.
Shane Beamer's already Gary said Patterson. He's not coming.
Yeah. Shane Beamer refuted that so hard that it would be awfully hard for him to come back from that.
Well, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring quickly, too. I like Billy Napier. I think he's my number one dark horse. I do like Will Healy. He's young, but I think he could be a dark horse there. So everybody watching, cross those six names off your list. They're not going to be the head coach.
Not
going to
happen.
They'll be somebody else. So you mentioned Miami. Let's talk about Miami quickly here at the end of episode 209 of the Tech Sideline podcast. The Hurricanes playing a lot of close games lately. We talked about this a little on Monday, how I believe their last seven games have all been one-score games.
I think it's their last six games, the biggest margin of victory for either team has been 4 points.
Right. Sounds right.
So all their games are going down to the wire. I think they were leading Florida State by, like, what, eight with, like, a minute or two left last week and somehow managed to lose the game. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? it seems like this is going to be a close game, but who really knows, because as we talked about earlier, we don't know the psyche of the players on each team because of the situations at their respective schools right now.
It's pretty much up in the air at this point. I'm surprised, Will, for your game pick, you didn't just do random number generator.
Yeah,
again.
I only pull that tool out like once a year.
It worked out for you last week. You tied David.
You're tied with David.
With David in the staff picks.
And actually, we'll get to game picks at the end, but you guys did pick differently, so there could be a changing of the guard at the top of the standings at the end of this week. The quarterback for Miami, Tyler Van Dyke, not a lot expected for Miami after De'Aaron King went down, but he's actually developed well and at least been serviceable for this.
I watched him for whatever reason. Last time we talked about him, I said his first game was against Appalachian State. It wasn't. It was against UVA. And I watched him for the first half against UVA, and he was terrible. And then all of a sudden, like, a light came on for him in the second half, and he's played pretty well since then. He's not a great runner, except for like one touchdown run he had against UVA, but as we've discussed, that's a wretched defense up there. So they don't run the ball well at Miami. Like, their top two running backs are true freshmen. Just don't run it for a high yards per carry. This is the first time in a while that Virginia Tech is playing a team that doesn't run the football well.
Yep.
So that bodes well because, you know, Virginia Tech has struggled to stop the run. So I like it from that matchup. And Miami's run defense has been bad. Their tackling has been awful. You think Virginia Tech's defense and their tackling has not been good, you have not watched Miami play yet. They're one of the worst tackling teams in college
in
football.
In the country, yes.
Absolutely horrible. Now, so to me, and you know, you could say this any game, but who are Virginia Tech's most likely tackle breakers on offense? I would say Raheem Blackshear, Tavion Robinson, and Trey Turner. Yep. They're the guys most likely to break tackles. So to me, those are the three guys that have to touch the ball this week. Now, the thing is, like, if you try to get it to Turner and Robinson too much, that means you're throwing the ball a lot, which means that's not your strength, right? But so I think this is one of those games where, you know, you have to make Miami pay for their weakness. Your key playmakers, when they have the opportunity, have to make Miami miss tackles, which they've been doing all year.
So overall, it feels kind of like a good matchup for Virginia Tech in a way.
Seems to be
bad run
matchup.
Offense for Miami and bad run defense for Miami. It kind of plays into Tech's hands.
I think so too. To me, like if nothing was going on in both programs as far as coaches and athletic directors getting fired and things like that, then I would feel pretty comfortable in a Tech pick this week, to be honest with you. But you just don't know how any of that stuff is going.
Yeah,
to
we've been talking all year how random this game can be to pick, and it's even more random.
Well, here's what concerns me. You know, Virginia Tech's offense was horrible earlier this year when Justin Fuente was with the scout team, right? Then he goes over and spends more time with the offense, and all of a sudden they're putting up 400 and 500 yard games and scoring a bunch of points, with the exception of Boston College when they lost Burmeister. Now Fuente's gone. He's not going to be spending more time with the offense this week.
And he was gone Tuesday morning.
He was gone Tuesday morning. He's going to be gone all week, you know. So now it's back to Cornelson, complete control. So do they go back to pre-Syracuse levels?
I mean, if this goes poorly, oh, gosh. You know, there's a large contingent on Twitter that is already really not fans of Brad Cornelson. On Saturday it goes poorly, it's going to – But what does it matter?
What does it matter?
Well, Virginia Tech 5-5 needs one of their last two to gain bowl eligibility. And again, just to throw it out there, there is still a scenario where Virginia Tech goes to the ACC championship game.
That's right.
I will lay it out for you. What needs to happen? Virginia needs to beat Pitt this weekend. Virginia Tech needs to beat Miami. Then Pitt loses their final game, which I want to say is against Louisville, possibly.
I can't remember who it is.
I think it is.
It's
Syracuse.
At Syracuse.
It is at
right.
Syracuse, yeah. In the dome, which again, anything can happen.
We know the Carrier Dome.
Then Virginia Tech beats Virginia in the end. So Virginia Tech wins out. Pitt loses out with a loss to Virginia this weekend. That is the way for Virginia Tech to win the Coastal. ACC Network has them at a 0.3% chance of that
happening.
You're telling me there's a chance.
Well, let's get into game picks. Obviously, the story of this week, not about the game. But you guys did put your picks in the preview, which again is already up on techsideline.com. Chris, we'll start with you.
I'm picking Tech. It's kind of a coin flip game for me. I forget the final score.
30-27.
Okay, that's fine. I just think it would seem – there's two ways to look at it. Like, I do worry about Tech's offense without Justin Fuente with them throughout the week. The other way to look at it is it'd just be so Miami to go out there and lose to a coachless Virginia Tech team, wouldn't it?
And look bad doing it.
Yeah, you're right. So I'm just going to pick Tech.
So I've got we'll Tech 34-31. So Malcolm, is as we drill down into David's pick, can you pull up the game preview on the web browser and get ready to show it over the video? Because we want to see how the fans are picking.
Yes.
So I got Virginia Tech 34, Miami 31. And Jake, what does David have?
So David... he is the only one picking Miami this week in a tight one, 33-31. He does say at the very end, don't count out J.C. Price and the Hokies, though. So, David, the only one on Miami this week. Very interesting. Could shake up the standings. I believe we're going to bring it up. But right now, Will and David are tied at 6-4. Chris, a game back at 5-5. The random number generator really got Will in control here. Now you can see it on the screen.
So scroll up there a little bit, Malcolm, to the poll and click view results. And so we've got, I think
599?
It's
599.
39% are saying the Hokies are going to win by 1 to 10. So now there's another 32% that say Miami's going to win by 1 to 10.
And actually, it's 51% says the Hokies going to win, 49% says Miami.
Yeah,
win,
so it's pretty
point.
Split.
So the fans are really split.
Yeah, two teams that are 5-5 overall and 3-3 in the ACC. Split opinions for two what seems like pretty even teams.
I basically mind the toss-up.
David's saying that his is a toss-up here. And again, I do want to mention, Will used a random number generator to tie the lead last week.
I'm the only one that does this honest every week. David, do you read our predictions before you write yours?
Not usually.
Okay. Not okay. Usually. Good. Because
I usually go down to the bottom and then go.
Okay.
So
you don't read our predictions before you make your prediction. Okay.
So the humor of it is, it's a good thing these game previews are free, because the fans are 7-3 on
yes.
the year, and David and I are 6-4, and Chris is 5-5. So. Yeah.
Well, and interestingly enough, this is the first time that the fans have gotten it right on who wins, but wrong on the spread.
Yeah,
every other time, yeah. They've been right on 1 to 10 or 11 plus, too.
Yeah, so what Jake means by that is the fans said that Virginia Tech would beat Duke by 1 to 10 points, and it actually wound up being 31. Yeah.
And that was separated by just 11 votes. 372 votes, Hokies by 1 to 10, 361 Duke by 1 to 10. So a very close one
with
over 1,000 voters. So an 11-point split there.
I did not have an appreciation of how really bad Duke is.
Yeah, man. I didn't fully grasp it either. They're like their defenders just kind of like run around and they have no idea where to go.
So Keshawn King's touchdown, you know, the Duke guy had him at like the 15 or 20 yard line and just played patty cake on his back and fell down. Yeah, you know, and that was kind of them the whole game.
Well, since it may be more interesting than the actual game on the field, it is a battle, Will versus David this week. Miami wins. I believe David pretty much clinches the season title for game picks. But Will could take his first lead of the season.
I have a 0.3% chance.
He has a 0.3% chance. If Chris wins out at this point and gets some help.
We might have to figure out a tiebreaker here.
We need like a trophy that we can bring on set for the winner.
Well, tiebreaker will be points differential in game predictions, I would say.
Okay.
We'll go with that. We'll have somebody calculate that. All right. Let's check in with the YouTube chat. I'm sure there's plenty of questions in there. Katie, what we got today?
All right. Bear with me while I ask this question. It's from Justin Thomas about coaching. What is preferred, a clean house and start from scratch, hire from within and bolster, or hire out but retain some of the current staff so we don't lose too many players and recruits?
I think I would go with the last option. You know, not to make it sound like this is what you should do this day and age, but I do remember when Frank started here, he kept one guy, Billy Height, off of Bill Dooley's staff, and that turned out to be a valuable thing to do. Part of it might have to do with who are you bringing in from the outside. Like, let's say they do hire Jeff Grimes. Jeff Grimes is a little familiar with Virginia Tech. If you hire, you know, like Frank was coming in and he had played at Virginia Tech, but it was important to him to have a guy to hold over from the staff to kind of help with the transition. And so that doesn't mean that I think the next guy should come in and keep Justin Hamilton, J.C. Price, Jack Tyler.
All of them.
But I think there is something to be said for and I think that question was asked of Witt yesterday. You know, are you going to – I don't remember exactly how the question was phrased. Maybe David does, but it was kind of like, do you see – any of your current staff remaining on the new staff? And Witt's answer was the correct answer. I can recommend to the new guy that he interview guys who are already on staff, but I'm not necessarily going to make that decision for him.
Absolutely.
So where do you stand on it, Chris?
I'm open to certain members of the current staff remaining. You know, on the offensive side of the ball, I like Adam Lechtenberg. I think he's done a great job recruiting and as an evaluator. And, I mean, look, like one Adam Lechtenberg recruit has seen the field as a running back, and he's already better than any running back that Zon Burden recruited, right?
Malachi Thomas.
So I like him. I like Vance Weiss. I like James Shebus. Tech's tight ends develop, and their Tech is always, you know, a good, solid special teams unit. Defensive side of the ball, I really like Ryan Smith as a coach and a recruiter. Mm-hmm. I like Jay Ham. I like J.C. Price, and I've heard great things about Jack Tyler as a recruiter as well. Like, so I'm open to keeping any of those guys. But at the same time, I really don't want the next coach to retain like six guys from a staff that just got fired.
Yeah.
So I don't want to sit here and say, oh, man, I want him to clean house and fire everybody. But I do think he needs to make his own impact and for the most part bring in new guys. I will say my number one choice out of all assistant coaches to retain is Ryan Smith.
Okay, interesting.
And quickly, before we get to another question, I want to touch on recruiting here. We've already seen a few of Virginia Tech commits post that they've gotten offers from other Power 5 schools.
Yep.
How important is it going to be once you get that guy hired to go out and try and retain some of this class, some of the big names, Gunnar Givens, Ramon Brown, Alex Horgy?
Yeah, certainly. I think, look, you shouldn't make your coaching decision based on like one recruiting class. That's how you get yourself in trouble long term. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a good class for Tech. I'm not just saying that because it's ranked 22nd or 25th in the country.
Fourth in the ACC.
Yeah, exactly. I think Justin Fuente has improved his staff in terms of evaluations and closing over the last 2 years. And I think we're reaping the benefits this year. I like a lot of their strategies and their new strategies in recruiting. I wish those strategies and hires had been done early in his tenure, or we might be having a different conversation today.
Yeah.
So I do like this class. So I want to keep as many of them as possible, for sure.
And in case you missed it, Witt did address this during the press conference. He said some of the work they're going to be doing in the coming days will be calling each of the committed recruits.
Witt and JC are having Zoom conversations today with committed recruits.
So no fear. It's not like their commits are being ignored. That's not how it works.
And those guys are going to get offers. And look, some of them are going to get offers anyway.
Yeah.
Like that offensive lineman they've got committed from South Carolina, I forget his name, but I think he's a great prospect.
Yeah.
And I'm actually shocked that he hasn't already picked up a bunch of offers. Like, I believe Tech actually beat out South Carolina for him, if I remember correctly. And he's a South Carolina recruit. So, those guys are going to pick up offers, but I think they were going to pick up offers anyway. Yeah. The signing day is not till December 15th. Look, if a guy decommits tomorrow, don't worry about it. Because he's young and he doesn't know what he's doing, and you've got a month to get him back if the next coach wants him. So it's not going to keep me up at night.
All right, John Joyce asks, is it reasonable to think Fuente was never going to be successful, didn't get his own defensive coordinator, strength and conditioning, and had a limited budget for hires? Seems like we didn't set him up for success.
In retrospect, it does look that way, yeah.
Yeah. I wrote yesterday that, and Witt said this in his press conference, and he'd actually said it after, I didn't watch his press conference live. I finished my article, and then I watched it, and I actually liked that he basically almost word for word said what I said in my article. He said, we all failed, and I called it a group effort in my article. Justin Fuente made mistakes, and the people around Justin Fuente made mistakes. Yep. And I think that's a learning lesson for everybody.
It's really – so I thought about this earlier in the podcast. We were talking about, 2015, and I really became aware of what other programs were doing to staff up. Mm-hmm. In late 2015, early 2016, it was after Alabama and Clemson played in the national championship game, and articles came out about the staffs that they had at those two schools. And that they weren't just $50,000 a year guys. They had former head coaches and things like that. And I did a little research, and at that time, Alabama listed something like 32 guys, support staff, and Clemson listed 29, and Virginia Tech listed a small number like 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And they were apples and oranges. For example, Clemson had Brad Scott, who used to be head coach at South Carolina, and Virginia Tech didn't have a Brad Scott type.
Yeah.
So it was that time frame at which I was only starting to become aware of what Nick Saban had already started doing in the late 2000s with this huge staffing model. So it's only been 6 years, but the landscape is incredibly different. And the people at Virginia Tech know that. They know so much more now than they knew back then.
There
is alignment at the university. There's an understanding by the athletic director, all this
stuff. And then this is why I want an associate athletic director for football who's worked somewhere else. And I know John Blaine is technically in that role, but he only ever worked for Frank Beamer, right? I want someone with experience at other programs who can come in and add different perspectives on things. Look, and I think we always need a Virginia Tech presence in our athletic department, on our football staff, and everything like that. I mean, that's very popular with the fans and everything like that. There have to be enough people over there in the operation to understand the culture and what works here. But you can't go forever without getting outside perspectives and understanding what other people are doing and maybe how you can mesh that with what you do well to become a better program. So, I would love to have a new football administrator,
kind of
a guy who
the
just
CEO at Coastal Carolina,
who dedicates himself full time to football. I mean, like, John Boleyn has other jobs in the athletic department. There's no way he could dedicate himself full time to it, even if he wanted to. So it's not just a new head coach that Virginia Tech needs. Like, I'm going to be paying just as much attention to the assistants the head coach hires. I'm going to be paying close attention to the strength and conditioning coach that he hires, and I'm going to be paying close attention to whatever administrative moves may get made between now and next August to accompany all this. I think it's all equally important.
All right, let's get one more from Katie if there's any good ones in there.
Scott Glessner asks, how do you see the players' attitudes in the last two games? Unchanged, going all out, ho-hum.
For the most part, they've played hard this year.
Yeah, they have.
I think the Boston College game was pretty deflating for the whole team, but Fuente always comes out and praises the effort of his teams after the game, and I don't think the effort was bad
against Boston College. I just don't think it's tough to win without Burmeister.
There's just not much you could do in that game.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to, I hope it's going to be about the same. You know, I can't see them playing a whole lot harder than they've been playing this year in general.
I don't, it's a guess. You could flip a three-sided coin, man. I mean, you could say the same thing for the Miami players.
Yeah.
You don't know if the Miami players will be out on South Beach the night before, for goodness sake. So you still, you don't know what's going to happen down there.
Since it's a night game, I guess they have time to sleep.
They do. That's true. That's a good point.
Sleep it off in the morning.
Yeah. I'm inclined to believe Tech will play hard. You know, they might have had a tough day yesterday. Because just dealing with the emotions of it, like, okay, you get told by the athletic director that your coach is fired, and then you immediately go to position meetings and then to practice.
Like, I can tell you that for me, it was weird waking up this morning, and we've spent 6 years talking about Justin Fuente, and we're not really going to talk about him anymore. There is a void there. Whether you like the guy or not, It leaves a void, you know, and I'm not sure how to process that.
Yeah, I didn't feel really weird because it's one of those things like I've been expecting a change for a month now or more than a month. So yeah. I've had time to process it. I didn't feel any emotions yesterday because I've had time to process it. The players haven't had much time to process it. But, you know, 24, here we are over 24 hours later. They've probably had time to process it now. They've been able to talk to all their assistant, you know, all of their positional coaches, talk to J.C. Price. I'm inclined to believe they'll go out and play with good effort on Saturday.
The players' day-to-day doesn't change a whole lot. You know, they still got to go work with their assistant coaches, still got to go through drills, so a lot of the routine is still there.
Yes.
All right, well, thank you to everybody who asked questions in the chat today. Thank you, Katie, for bringing those to us. Before we get out of here, want to talk basketball, just one thing, a big win over Radford on Monday. Slow start, but they pulled away, and kind of the takeaway was the Justin Mutz alley-oop dunk from Storm Murphy ended up being number one on SportsCenter. Yeah. Evan Hughes making the call on that one. Are we going to bring it up? And here we go. Yeah, our new feature today.
Yeah, we're so advanced. The Nutmeg. And I talked about that in our last podcast, how I'd watched highlights of him at Wofford and saw him nutmeg some dude.
Please don't ask us to explain what a nutmeg is.
It's in soccer. It's a
soccer term.
Yeah.
Come on. I know.
He knows. Some people don't.
I know why one of those syllables is what it is.
And I believe Mike Young after the game said if that had not gone well, Mike Young's head would have spun around.
Oh, yeah. I heard him say that on the post-game radio interview. Yeah.
And Mike was not happy with the offensive effort in general, and the team agreed.
I think in five of our six halves of basketball this year, we've had really good offensive performances, but that first half against Radford was not a good offensive performance. But no. Five out of six ain't bad. I think we got the good thing about Tech is like even when things weren't going well offensively for them in the first half, they really did stay engaged defensively. I'd like to see Aline get out of his slump. It's not like it's a shooting slump for him. Yes, he's not shooting well, but he's not shooting well because his shot selection is bad right now. He's forcing things too early in the shot clock, and the ball movement from him is not great. And
he appears to be a catch and shoot guy. He gets away from that.
He had a similar stretch last year where he struggled, and then he goes out against Florida in the NCAA tournament and drops 30 on him.
Yeah.
So he's very capable. You just got to get him a little more consistent.
And Justin Mutz, as you saw there, he is a highlight machine. I believe that's four highlight dunks he's had in three games already. So,
in case you missed it, he was standing at when Radford was shooting free throws in the second half. Mutz was standing there starting the Let's Go Hokies chant with the students. There is film of him yelling, Let's Go, and the students yelling Hokies and him yelling, Let's Go, as they're waiting for a Radford player to shoot a free throw. And there's just not enough of that in college sports.
It's so sad that wasn't an ACC game because we would have gotten free bacon in the second half.
Yes.
Because that guy missed back-to-back
He missed back-to-back free throws. Yeah. Tech now 3-0. Again, Radford. Tech kind of got lucky with the poor performance in the first half. Radford ended up shooting 2 of 24 from three-point range and 18 turnovers.
Radford is a big, strong team that can't shoot.
Now listen, though. This is three games in a row where Virginia Tech's opponent has not been able to make three-pointers.
Right.
Is it a coincidence or is it an actual?
The question is it them or is it Virginia Tech doing something?
I was impressed with how Virginia Tech got through screens and closed out on shooters against Navy. Yeah. So I think it's just as much.
And the Navy coach said it was them giving credit to Virginia Tech.
Well, and two more games at Castle Coliseum for Virginia Tech this week. Tomorrow against St. Francis, who just lost by, I believe, 50 to West Virginia last night. And then Sunday against Merrimack before a week from today. Preseason NIT in Brooklyn against the Memphis Tigers, who got a big win over St. Louis last night.
What time is that game? Is that a night game? Or?
I believe it is a night game. Okay. I want to say 7:30.
Okay.
And then a lot going on in Virginia Tech athletics as well. You got women's game tonight and another one this weekend. Men's soccer NCAA tournament game tomorrow at home against Campbell. Then women's play Arkansas on Friday at 7:30 on the road. Also wrestling starting Friday and Saturday with Ohio State and Gardner-Webb. So tons going on in Blacksburg, outside of Blacksburg over the next couple of days.
Have fun, Mr. Managing Editor David Cunningham.
That's right. He's the hardest working man I know. The Memphis game is 9:30 at night.
9:30. Okay.
Yeah, so David will be in Miami covering the football game. We've got Chris Hirons with an Olympic sports article focused on the two soccer teams coming out. He'll be covering both women's basketball games this week. I'm sure, David, will you be covering both the basketball games as well? So David's got men's basketball. And what else is coming up on TechSideline.com?
I've got a group of our writers all giving them, you know, brief, probably like one-page thoughts on what on traits and characteristics we're looking for the next football coach. That's coming out tomorrow.
Okay.
Sure, we'll have probably a Q&A on Friday. And I hope early next week to release my article, like the big, long blurb on coaching research. Yep. And with information and everything.
It's
like
a race, man. You better beat wit to it. You better get that out.
I don't think anything will get announced quickly.
I think Chris will win the race.
And I forgot to mention, Jack Brizendine also will have wrestling coverage this weekend as well.
Wow.
As the wrestling starts on Friday. Is it, 7 versus 9, I want to say? Virginia Tech 7, Ohio State 9th in the country.
Nice. David, are you going to go to the beach on Saturday morning? You should. Exactly.
Yep. Got to go wake up some of the Miami football players.
Get them off the beach and tell them they need to go play a football game.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for episode 209 of the Tech Sideline podcast. Long one, almost an hour and 45 minutes. But we knew this podcast was coming again just a little bit earlier than we thought. But Justin Fuente, no longer with the Virginia Tech football program. And I'm sure we'll have many more podcasts over the next few weeks talking about who could replace him. And when that announcement comes, we will have all your coverage on Tech Sideline. Want to thank everybody on set. Will Stewart, founder and general manager of TechSideline.com, at Will Stewart, TSL on Twitter. Chris Coleman, lead analyst and columnist at TechSideline.com. He's at Chris Coleman, TSL on Twitter. Make sure to follow him. A lot of tweets yesterday about the coaching stuff. So
yeah, I'm not going to do that too much more.
Well, still definitely a good follow on Twitter if you want to keep up to date on what's going on. In the fourth chair today, Katie Adams. She did a great job with the questions and also her segment in the middle.
And she's late for class or whatever comes next.
She is.
She's already packing up.
Yes, this has been one of the longer ones. She's at Katie6Adams on Twitter if you want to follow her. Malcolm Stewart always does a great job behind the scenes and getting our picture-in-picture stuff working today. So a great job there. And I'm your host, Jake Lyman. Signing off, enjoy the weekend of great Hokie sports, Hokies fans. We'll see you next time.